I'm sorry, you know, I'm all out of these handouts. I have some from last week if you'd like. All right. I'm going to start with a little bit of review over the situation. You remember, we're writing an epistle to the early believers in Rome. And of these early believers, there are two flavors, you might say, and then there's subtypes. The two flavors, of course, are Jewish and Gentile. Regarding the Jewish believers in Rome, we find that there are two types of Jewish believers in Rome. There are the people who were born Jewish, meaning they had a Jewish, this person had a Jewish mother, a woman who is legally Jewish. Or there's people who became Jewish through a ritual conversion, a legal conversion, to acquire Jewish nationality. And this conversion entails circumcision for men, immersion in a mikveh for both men and women, and taking on the what Paul refers to as the works of the Torah. Those are the distinctive signs, the commandments that God gave, specifically enjoined upon the Jewish people. They are specific to the Jewish people. So that's the way that you became Jewish, and still do, by the way, because that still works. The other type of people that are in Rome are Gentiles. Now, there are two types of Gentiles in Rome. The first type, Paul isn't writing to at all. They're not in his readership, and that's the idolaters. And the idolaters are most of the Gentiles of Rome, most of the people of Rome. And in fact, I pointed out in previous lessons that under Roman law, it's actually illegal for Gentiles not to worship the gods. That Jewish people have a legal exemption from worshiping the gods. But there is a type of Gentile that Paul has in mind, and this is the God-fearing Gentile. This term specifically refers to a Gentile who has adopted the worship of the God of Israel and has distanced himself from the worship of the gods, from polytheism, or perhaps completely renounced idolatry altogether, which is certainly what Paul's God-fearers fall into, that latter camp. The argument that Paul is making as he writes to the believers in Rome, Paul is making this argument for his gospel, what he calls his gospel, and his gospel specifically states, or he states in his gospel, that God-fearing Gentiles do not need to become Jewish and should not become Jewish through a proselyte ritual, that is, undergo conversion, in order to be saved. Now, on the other side of this 2,000 years, that sounds pretty obvious. In fact, we've come to the point where in most Christian theology, you have to make an argument to say that a Jewish person doesn't need to become a Gentile in order to be saved, because that's generally the expectation, is that if a Jewish person becomes a disciple of Yeshua, you just don't like the smell of the eggs.
Well.
It's kind of yeah.
Slow pension.
Yeah. All right.
No,
that's all right. That's all right. I think as the evening goes on and people catch the waft of the eggs, they'll want some. In any case, going on with this argument that Paul is making, he's saying that, and it's obvious to us, of course, that you don't have to become Jewish in order to inherit the kingdom of heaven. You do not have to be Jewish in order to inherit the world to come. Or to put it in evangelical language, you don't have to be Jewish to be saved. The problem that almost everybody has in understanding Paul is that they don't understand this issue. Simply that in Paul's day, that was a radical idea, and most people disagreed with him. Most other believers disagreed with him. Even among the apostles, not everybody agreed with this position. It was controversial. So controversial that Luke dedicates a significant amount of the book of Acts to this very subject. Right, but in reading it and becoming familiar with it and becoming familiar with the outcome of it, and of course seeing the world as we see it today, where most followers of Jesus are in fact not Jewish, it's very difficult to get into that mindset where Paul's idea is radical and a minority opinion, as it was in his day. The believing community in Rome, as I explained to you, was composed of Jewish believers and proselytes. Jewish believers and proselytes, so all Jews. And then something happened to upset that order of things, and that was the expulsion of the Jewish people from Rome for a period of several years, leaving only Gentiles. Meaning that only the God-fearing Gentiles, if there were any, those that were there, were left holding the bag, so to speak. Now, the Jewish believers have returned, the Jewish people have returned to Rome, and some 5 years have passed since their return, I believe, at the time that this epistle is being written. At least it's recent. It's recent that they've returned. And so there's difficulty integrating this new reality of Gentile believers and Jewish believers. It's a new reality now because we're past Acts 15 when this decision has been made by the Jerusalem Council, the Council of the Apostles, in Acts chapter 15. So Paul is not just a loose cannon anymore. Paul has the endorsement of Peter, James, and the elders of the apostles. Does that all make sense? All right, great. So, we're all on the same page. Yes?
Curious, did the Jerusalem Council speak, as it were, for the whole Jewish community?
No. That's a great question. Did the Jerusalem Council speak for the whole Jewish community? No, they're not actually the Sanhedrin would be the committee that speaks for the whole Jewish community. But the Jerusalem Council, nevertheless, feels like they do speak for the whole Jewish community. It's just that not all the Jewish world acknowledges them yet. So, for example, when James, who is the head of that council, sends out his epistle, he doesn't send out his epistle to the believers in Yeshua. You know, he sends out his epistle to the 12 tribes of Israel. He feels like, you know, he's in a position as the brother of the master, the brother of the king of the Jews, to address all Israel, not just his own particular sect. Troy, there's no chairs, so you have to start Tish B'Av early, I'm afraid. Oh, that would be terrible to navigate to.
Yeah, but you have to come all the way down here.
Oh, for crying out loud, just give him the chair. don't make him sit in the middle.
We're going to walk past you now.
Right.
Turn the mics right in front of you. Right here.
Yes.
You have to, the Gentiles had to worship the idols. So if Gentiles became Christians, are they still under the rules that worship the idols also?
Yes. If they did not convert, if a God-fearing Gentile did not convert, he's still expected to do his civic duty. And his civic duty involves worship of the idols, worship of the Caesar, worship of past Caesars, certainly worship of the goddess of Rome. So that's the...
Maybe they wanted to become Jews.
Oh, yeah, the high motivation. Yeah. High motivation to become a proselyte. And Paul is having to, as he makes his case, he's arguing against it on both sides. Yeah, because so most Gentile believers naturally would want to become Jewish. It's not so easy as it is today, though. I mean, in those days, you just don't up and change your nation. It is like incredible social stigma, and so it's very difficult. I mean, if you wanted to retain employment or any sort of respect or dignity, it's very difficult. So, for example, the first God-fearer we meet, Cornelius, he's a centurion. Conversion, not an option for a centurion, right? So there's lots of reasons that you wouldn't be able to make the full transition. And Paul is arguing that you shouldn't make the full transition. Here, this isn't on your sheet, but I'll show you something from Corinthians.